just going to go through shaylas, right? Questions that come up that people ask, and see if we can figure out the answers. And so it's good to have a Shulchan Aruch with you. But should we go Tzadi Aleph through Tzadi Dal, or Tzadi Dal through Tzadi Aleph, or just mix and match? Any preference? What? In order from the beginning, you think? Yeah? Okay. All right, so let's start with this. Okay, you're packing. This actually happened also. Many of these actually happened. Some of them I just had to make up. This one actually happened. Some of my shul, they're packing for a Chalamoy trip, Chalamoy Pesach trip. So you have to pack up your food because you can't buy food anywhere. So the mom had taken some slices of American cheese and put them in a Ziploc bag to snack on during the drive. And she asked one of her children, I think it was a high school age son, to pack up some cold cuts that they were going to have for lunch, you know, later that day. They've obviously a box of matzahs, but they're not going to make a figure. They put a thing of ketchup, box of matzahs, and some cold cuts. So the idiot kid took the cold cuts and he put them in the same plastic Ziploc as the cheese that she had. He figured, why should I waste a Ziploc? You know, so he put the cold cuts in the same Ziploc as the cheese, and she only noticed it when they were in the car driving there, and they were already like an hour and a half away from home, and the little guy wanted a piece of American cheese, and she pulls out the bag with American cheese, and there's turkey all over the American cheese. So the shaila is there any way to eat that cheese or that turkey? Maybe that was their lunch plan. What's the halacha in such a case? This one's pretty straightforward, right? So now the question is the kid an idiot? Is it pashut that they're not dry? Cheese and cold, sometimes cold cuts, you say, is very, very moist. One second. Let's get some Tzadi Aleph. Yeah. It's nechel machem smachel. Pashas is it could be rinsed off easily enough, right? So you say it's not yavish. No, but even if it's dry, no. Meaning, why does it make a difference? Meaning, if it's dry, it makes a difference whether you can whether you can do the hadacha. No, that. Right, the Rama writes the Dafka Davashish Balachluchis Ktsas of Dovri Yavish Mamish, Imlo Balaha Kli Rak Batson, Imoto and Yechbo Dovri Yavish Balach Klal. That's as far as placing it there in the first place. Right? Meaning you need a Hadacha by a Dovri Lach, but the Shulchan Aruch says, Kol Midi Dibai Hadacha, Kodom Laniach, Basar Heter Tzonin, Bekarish Alisar Tzonin, Ashul Chachila, Dilma Achil Below Hadacha. That it's also the chachila to put them together in the first place, but over here there's no because we're afraid you're going to eat it below hadacha. So that's where the Rama says. But if it's davri yavish mamish, then mutla niyachbo davri yavish below hadacha klal. So 1 second. So you have the whole question. If it's alright, I assume that it's dry enough. But pashas is requires hadacha, right? Certainly in that situation. Is the kid an idiot for doing it? So yes, because that's what the mechaber pasuk is. Now let's say it was hot dogs that they wanted to barbecue that night. So then it gets a little trickier, right? Because we said that if it's something that midi d'orche b'hadacha, kigon basar chai, chiyotzi b'shar l'chadchila, something that's basar chai, that you would normally rinse anyway, would be mutter. But do you rinse hot dogs? You pashas, you don't rinse hot dogs. And plus, they're not really chai. So maybe hot dogs wouldn't be a good example, but if you have like steaks, that they wanted to barbecue for dinner, so then maybe even l'chadchila you'd be allowed to do it. Of course, it's not, not the yeshivish thing to do, but maybe l'chadchila it would even be mutter. But the pashas is that the hadachah should be perfectly fine. And then, you know, we had the classic case, and this happens all the time for business travelers. I was never a business traveler, but I went to many hotels over the course of many summers with my kids. But let's say you're on a business trip and you're staying somewhere far away from a Jewish community, and the hotel offers a continental breakfast that has plenty of bacon and other very, very non-kosher items. Could you take one of the bowls and spoons and eat cold cereal and milk, and take a small plate and put some grapes and some, grapefruit on the plate, and eat some fruits, some cold fruit off of the plate? So what are we paskin about this? About using the plates of the hotel? No, what are we paskin? What? So machlokas has a shach, and how do we paskin? Like the shach, that bakrai, meaning we pass like the most mekel shita. It's just that even the shach is only going to be mekel bakrai. So we assume the plate is obviously not kosher. So the Ramah would say that it's aser, but the Taz and the shach both say it would be permissible. But the Taz will allow it if you're putting something dry. The shach will allow even putting something moist in the bowl, like milk, so the Taz would probably allow even the Taz would allow if you're just putting some grapes or something, but the Shach says that it's only b'derech harai, that only if you're doing it once in a while. But if it's any sort of kvius, so if let's say you're at a you're at an Airbnb or something, so then you're not allowed to use it more than once, because at an Airbnb, meaning if you're using it day in day out, so then it could already become more kavua. If it was hot?
Or I guess to toast it would be a problem. But let's say you had something that was hot on one of those plates. So would that be allowed if it was yavish?
I thought not. No, we're only talking about tzadim b'tzadim. Meaning, because you're saying because tasagavar?
I thought the Taz said that...
Show me. I don't remember. What does the Taz say? The klisha neshamish bo iser tzonein mutal aniach bo biyavish cham. That's only if it was iser tzonein. I mean, you see at the continental breakfast they have hot bacon and whatever else, right? So you always assume cham. So right, so that's tricky to define, right? So what does that mean, 30 days? For 30 days or every 30 days? Like how often are you going to use it? So it's very possible that if you're staying at a place for a week and you're reusing the same plates every single day, that would be a problem.
Does it matter if it's a lot close, like the hotel case, what type of clay it is? Like clairas or
So glass, you always have more of a tzad lahakel, because you have the sheet and the chaber, that glass is not palaya at all. But meikra din, we're machmir on glass also. So now, if it's a drinking glass, so then it was never, you probably have the right to assume, at least to be mitzdarif, the strong possibility that it never had anything hot in it. Meaning if it's just a regular drinking glass that people drink water or orange juice or something out of, you they have set up by the orange juice station or something like that, so then you have much more of a tzad lahakel, especially since mechaber holds a glass is not baleya. But with the regular plates, I think you have to assume that there was hot food that was made on the plates. And if it's a glass plate, Ashkenazim would probably still have to be machmir, right? L'chora. Okay, some of these questions I got from Rav Eliada Goldberg from his Smichas Chavra questions. So let's see. Your wife asks you to take out the meat from the fridge. Oh, this one was not from Rav Eliada. This one was me. Your wife asks you to take out the meat from the fridge when you wake up Shabbos morning and put it on the hot plate, right? That's your job. That you have to take it out of the fridge and put it on the hot plate. The hot plate with Kedero, whatever it is. However, whatever is okay to do on Shabbos, that's what you're going to do. Warming drawer, hot plate, however your way. You wake up at 6 a.m. when your 8-month-old wakes up, and you dutifully take out the meat. Before putting it on the hot plate, you prepare a warm bottle of milchik formula for the baby. as you, the 8 months old still have formula, right? Is that a thing? Yeah. Okay. I don't know. Is this borderline? They're up to milk by then. Whatever it is. Okay. You have. I made it formula because I needed it to be hot. You know. And sometimes when you make, when you put formula in, you put a little bit of hot water in to really, you know, mix it well, and then you'll add the cold water so you don't burn the baby, the baby's mouth. But with milk, normally it's cold, and then you may add a little hot water just to take the chill out of the milk. But anyway, okay. So you're making formula for the baby, and you're shaking the bottle to mix the formula with the hot water, and a drop or two of the milk formula splatters directly onto the meat because you didn't put your finger over the hole on the top of the, or you didn't screw on the top well enough, and a little bit goes out of the where you didn't screw it on well enough and hits the meat. The milk was hot because you hadn't yet mixed it in cold water. Is the meat kosher? So here's what you do. You figure, I'll ask the rabbi later, right? A lot of people say, I'm going to play it safe right now. I'm going to assume that, you know, I'm going to put it on the hot plate because I want to warm it up because my wife told me to warm it up. And if the rabbi tells me that it's kosher, then I'll eat it. If the rabbi tells me it's not kosher, we won't eat it. But I'm not going to, you know, leave it aside for now, just in case. I want to have it just in case. So the guy comes to shul and he tells you, this is what happened this morning. So what are you tying? Is the meat kosher? Is the meat not kosher? It hit the meat directly. Is there shishim in the entire meat against the, let's say there's shishim in the entire meat against it. What? It's a piece of London broil. It's a big, you know, chunk of meat. It's cold meat you just took out of the fridge, right? And hot milk lands on it. Oh, so this is a complicated case because at first you'd say to say, what does that even mean to sagover in that case? Kedei klipa, right? All you need to do is kedei klipa. But then, what? Oh, so if you have shishim, then you don't have to worry about it, but you need to make sure that you have shishim, right? I mean, you say tasal gavar, you take off kedei klipa, but anything that's more than kedei klipa, l'chari, you'd have shishim. So, Shulchan Aruch, let's see what it says over here. Shulchan Aruch and Siv Dali, right? It says Shulchan Aruch, basar v'chal av rotchin, shenasar v'yachad, afilu basar tzonein, l'toch chal av roteich, chal av tzonein, l'toch basar roteich, not our case yet, hakal asim shum tasal gavar, aval, chal av roteich, shenafal al basar tzonein, al basar tzonein, shenafal l'toch chal av tzonein, kolef abasar, v'shar abasar mutter. Then all you need is kedei klipa, and that's it. The shar abasar is mutter. B'makum, and then says the Rama, b'makum shar abasar, tzarech klipa, here it is, im lo kopu ubishlu kach mutter b'dieven. If you didn't do the klipa and you were mevashal it that way, then it's going to be mutter b'dieven. So the shach says, well, wait a second. If you view the kedei klipa as a tarovus of basar and chalav, why would I be allowed to eat it without bittel? Meaning, he's saying you don't even eat; it's just mutter b'dieven. So the shach explains that the Rama is talking about a case that the meat must be crushed up and mixed together. So it's like a liquid; it doesn't need a kedei klipa. So the Magen Avraham learns that the Rama is no; it's like it's the mashmaus of the Rama, like it says. And if you forget to remove the kedei klipa and you cook the meat with other things, and you just remove the kedei klipa from that piece of meat, you can eat the rest even without shishim, because removing the kedei klipa is only a chumrah. So once it's removed, you don't need shishim. The Taz disagrees with Rama. Taz says, no, you always need shishim against the kedei klipa, because he holds like the Riva, who argues on Rabbeinu Tam, it requires shishim even by a liquid. But over here, l'chora, you don't have any of this. I mean, it's totally unnecessary. I mean, you have a big piece of meat, so the big piece of meat is always going to be shishim, connected the drop of milk that hits it, or even connected the kedei klipa right by the drop of milk. And then you have another major tzad l'hakel over here.
Formula is not all milk.
And it was all in klisheni also, right? Meaning it was coming from a klisheni.
But it's like,
what?
It's going
to
heat source now.
When it hit the meat, it was in a klisheni. Oh, once you put it on the heat source.
When it heats it, also, everything's cold. So ideally,
meaning when it hits it, it has a din of cold. So all really, meaning if the guy would have been thinking, what would he have done?
He
should have just done hadacha, right? He should have rinsed it. So, meaning, if you're the rabbi, your question is, What did you do? Did you just leave the milk there? Or he might say, well, I took a towel and I wiped off, you know, I took a tissue and I wiped off the milk, right? Or he might say, oh, I rinsed it off. I'm not going to leave the milk there. Right? But that's a question that needs to be asked, because if you rinse the milk off, then he doesn't eat anything. Because if the milk was coming from a klisheni, so then it's tzonin b'tzonin, right? So and it was coming from a klisheni, if it was in a baby bottle. So then it's tzonin b'tzonin. Plus, like we said, his formula is probably, I don't know what percentage of it is actually milk, even though it says OUD on it. But so tzonin b'tzonin, who knows? Maybe it's even batel b'shishim. So tzonin b'tzonin, and l'chara, all you need is hadach. You don't even need a klipa. But once he puts it on, if he didn't rinse it off, so then you're gonna do you need a klipa? You may not need a klipa then either. You just need shishim. Then you just heat it up together, right? Then you just need shishim. If he rinses it off, will be a bishul on the water. Right, then you get into that shaila about bishul with the droplets in the cup after you rinse it off. It's davshed miskavin and the mashahu that you're not even, you're not even go race. It's not even right. Yeah, you dry it off. You wash it. No, he's saying you wash it with cold water, but then you're putting that soaking wet piece of meat that has cold water sitting on its surface on the hot plate, so you're being mevashel the water. I think that right. That's what you meant, Kim. Yeah. So there's a shaila about if you the second cup of coffee, right, or if you rinse out a cup, whether you can have a. Suppose over there you have ein bishul achar bishul if it's the second cup of coffee, but rinsing out the cup is not as pashut. You have to dry it. Right. Hopefully he rinsed it and dried it. Hopefully. And l'chora, even if he didn't, right. That's what I'm saying. L'chora, even if he didn't, once he heated it up, then l'chora, all you need is shishim. No, am I off about that? Right, because then it's not an issue of cham that fell on tzonin. Then it's an issue of tzonin b'tzonin that you cook together. Right? So l'chora, you just need shishim.
Don't you need a liquid to cook it together? I mean, you have
it is a liquid. It's milk.
Okay.
Let's go weiter. Weiter? Next one? Yeah? Okay, let's move on to the Sadi Beis over here. Meat falls into a pot of hot milk that's on the fire. So you quickly grab the meat and you throw it out. What's the status of the milk? What's the status of the milk? So, no, this is pretty obvious, pretty straightforward. What?
Well, case
meat falls into a pot of hot milk that's on the fire. You grab the meat, throw it out. It's soaked in milk. You throw it out. Right, what's the status of the milk? So if there's shishim in the milk, keneg in the meat, then the milk is obviously mutter. If there's not shishim, so, right, according to the Ramah, the milk is going to be asur. The Shulchan Aruch says, you can ask a kfeila, right? Shulchan Aruch paskins that in such a case, you could always ask a kfeila, or a regular non-Jew who's masech l'fitumo taste the milk, and if he says he can't detect any taste, then it's going to be mutter. So do Sfardim rely on that? So remember we saw some discussion whether if you're a Sfardi, whether you could rely on Ti'imas Kfela, because the Kaf HaChaim says that even Sfardim are machmir like the Ramah, not to rely on Ti'imas Kfela b'zman hazeh. But Rav Vadia holds that Sfardim can rely on Ti'imas Kfela like the Mechaber says, you know, Maran Beit Yosef. So certainly Behefsim Ruba you could do so, or with any other Tziruf, Rav Vadia says you could do so, even though he's not thrilled about relying on a Kfela, but since that's technically the Sfardic Psak Halacha, if you have any other Tzad, Lahakel, or you have a Hefsim Ruba, so he's willing to rely on a Kfela. But now that sets up the following question. This one, Rav Eliyadasa. This happened, he said it happened at a bar mitzvah in Israel. We may have raised this one in Shir. Mashkiach of a catering company walks into the kitchen and he sees that the chef is accidentally using a Milchig Ben Yomo frying pan to make all the schnitzel for the meal. Meaning it was just used this morning at the hotel for the omelet station, and somehow the guy found that frying pan and he's frying schnitzel for the meal. So the guests of the bar mitzvah are already in the hall. Imagine it's your kid's bar mitzvah. You have people flowing from all over the world or whatever, you know, pre-corona, right? And all of the this is the main dish, right? The main dish that's going to be served at lunch is going to be a piece of potato kugel and a piece of schnitzel and some chalim. So this is it, right? And now it's all been fried in a milchig frying pan. So what do you do in such a case? So the shach writes. So what do you tie now? Okay, so first of all, it's only chicken, so it's Rabbanan, okay, if we need that. But we need more than that, right? We need more help than that. It's a Ben Yom HaMilchik frying pan. So, what? Stainless napaleya, especially if it's treated to be a non-stick or something. So I think we're normally machmir that the non-stick is more baleya, right? That it's like cheres. Right, because usually the frying pans nowadays have that non-stick surface to them. So I think some poskim are machmir that has a din like cheres. Did it get mixed with other schnitzel that was cooking in other frying pans that were actually fleishig frying pans? Okay, I mean, if you have one guy frying all the chicken, like, what are the chances, right? You're making a big bar mitzvah, so there are probably several frying pans going at the same time. So if it got mixed, what would that help? Chatichori l'skabed may create even a bigger problem. Okay, so the shach based on the Gemara in Chulin tells us a Jew is believed to tell you what things taste like. So if you know the ingredients in the mixture. So if you make a neder not to drink wine, your friend can taste the steak that was made with wine, and if he can't taste the wine, then you're allowed to eat the meat. Meaning, as long as you have a Jew who's allowed to taste it, is allowed to eat it, it would be fine. So remember, we had this this interesting suggestion that a creative suggestion that one of the poskim had. So a Jew is allowed to rely on another Jew who tastes it if the other Jew is a religious Jew. Problem is, how's a Jew going to eat this? Oh, but Svardim can rely on a kvela, right? So you could have a Svardi person, b'makom efsim ruba, Svardi can rely on a kvela. So you could have a Svardi person ask a non-Jew to taste it, right? Or ask a kvela to taste it. The kvela, the non-Jew will taste it, will say, I don't taste any, of course he's going to say he doesn't taste any milk in it, because when, chances are he's not going to taste any milk in it, and he's going to say it tastes just like regular chicken cutlets, regular whatever, schnitzel, doesn't taste like it has anything in it. Then the Sephardi could say, okay, now I can try it. The Sephardi can try it and say, yeah, he's right, doesn't taste like anything. Then the Ashkenazi is allowed to rely on the Sephardi. Right, that was the chap that some of the poskim had. V'makom hefsim meruba tav. We didn't mention that. I thought we mentioned that. We didn't mention that. Okay. So anyway, so that was the chap that they suggested.
You have to be concerned that the earlier schnitzels made were the ones that like, got more than milk in them.
That's a fair question. Meaning, if a person he was frying schnitzel all day, so maybe all the tam chalav went into the earlier schnitzels, and that's a chatik riliskavi, and that's going to be us. And that, so how could just because he tasted one of the later ones? That's a good question. Right, so you'd want to think about that also, but it's hard to know because if it was used at an omelet station, right, and they were, you know, it was Friday morning, it was used at an omelet station in the hotel, so they're constantly adding cheese and putting more. So Pashto says you're not going to have shish. Okay. Yeah. In which case?
When the meat falls into the,
as long as it's yatzoledes. Yeah. Now it's, okay, next case. It's Friday morning, you're scrambling eggs with some milk, and you pour the mixture into your hot milchik pan to fry it, right? And it splatters a little bit and goes to the outside of the soup pot that's right next to, you have a big giant soup pot on the stove, and you're trying to make yourself some scrambled eggs or whatever, or an omelet, and you pour the mixture of the milk and the eggs into the pan, and a little bit splatters and hits the outside of the soup pot. The soup pot is hot, and it's cooking. It's on the fire. So now what? What's the halacha of the soup pot? What questions you need? We always have to ask not just what's the halacha, what questions you need to ask. So this is like, this is a little more involved, obviously. Right?
Where in the pot did it hit?
Did it hit above the level of chicken soup, or... You know, where the chicken soup. So it depends which section of the pot the drops of milk land. If the milk / eggs fell on the bottom half of the pot, which has kineged atavshil, so what would we paskin?
Shishim.
So if there's chicken soup 60 times that drop of milk, which there always is, l'chora, it would be mutter. However, one thing to keep in mind, the Rama would say that you need to empty out the contents of the pot right away. because at any given moment the milk might penetrate. Maybe it hasn't yet penetrated, and at any given moment it might enter the food, and then that's going to be being mevatel l'sil chachila. Now, if you didn't do that because you didn't know, which is most often what's going to happen, the person's going to call the rabbi afterwards or an hour later. He's going to shut off the fire and take the thing off the fire, and then ask the question. Okay, so then it may be too late. The Chachma Sadam says that if the contents of the pot is way more than shishim, then you don't even need to empty the contents of the pot. Now, as far as the pot itself, so the Shulchan Aruch says you don't have to kasher it because it's ki'ilu went right into the pot. But the Ramah and the Shach say that you need to kasher the pot also. Right? In all these cases, you always have to ask the question, what's the din of the food? What's the din of the pot? And when we talk about sticking a kli into food that's in the pot, what's the din of the kli? And sometimes you need to ask four questions. Sometimes you're sticking a kli into the pot and drawing out food. So then you have, what's the din of the pot? What's the din of the food in the pot? What's the din of the food in the kli? And what's the din of the kli? Right? So sometimes it's four questions. Right? A lot of times when people ask the Shaila, they won't know to ask all of those questions. They're only thinking about, most often, by the way, what are people asking about? I was cooking whatever, I was cooking pasta, noodles and cheese, and then I realized, oh my gosh, it was a fleshing pot, and I stirred it with a milk spoon. So, and they don't tell you what they're asking about. What do you think they're normally asking about? So the first thing I always try to answer is what the status of the food is. Almost always they say, oh my God, no, I threw out the food. they always say, like, that's always the first thing. Are you crazy? I'm not touching that food. Noodles and cheese in a fleshic pot. By the way, what's the answer usually about the food? It's mutter, right? It's Seinu Ben Yamo. So it's almost always mutter, but no, it's like, that was the one kula I had for you. It was the food, and you threw it out. Unless they ate it already, right? Then it's just a question of how much tshuva they have to do, and you can tell that it's totally fine. They don't have to do so much tshuva.
Going back to the last case, what do we say about soap and use? Does that make it even
In which case? Which case?
Maybe
that's a tzad lahakel. If they were very hot and with soap, that the soap was pogame whatever blios were in there. Yeah, it's a tzadlag. Dishwasher, yeah. It's a tzadlag. On a Keurig machine?
Yeah.
A Keurig machine is so distant from...
plastic,
but it's also not where it's touching any of the water. Meaning unless it splatters right on the tank on the side with all the water. But it touches it, the Keurig machine is like five different kelim. It's not, they just happen to be screwed together. So I think most of the time it's going to be fine. Well, if it lands on the top of the Keurig, it's not going to do anything. So what were we saying? So the Ramah and the Shach say that you need to kasher it. Again, the Badei HaShulchan quotes on the Chachma Sadam that if the contents of the pot are way, way, way more than Shishim, then you don't need to kasher the pot either. The Taz holds that the pot does not need to be kashered, and just after 24 hours, it's fine. Right? So again, so what happened? If it's connected to Tavshil, so as long as you have Shishim in the Tavshil, then Tavshil is going to be fine. The Ramah suggests better to empty it out as soon as possible. Right? Why is it better to, I'll get to the question in a second, why is it better to empty it out as soon as possible? Because you never know when it's going to penetrate. But if you didn't empty it out as soon as possible, that's okay also. Says the Chachma Sadam, if there's way, 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 way more than Shishim, you don't even need to empty it out as soon as possible. Now, as far as the pot itself, the Machlok is Mechaber Ramah, whether it needs to be kashered. But again, over there also, the Chachma Sadam says, if it's way, 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 way more than Shishim, then you don't need to even kasher it. And at least you can wait till the Taz says you can wait 24 hours, and then you won't need to kasher it. Now, what if it falls on the upper part of the pot, where there's no food inside the pot? Shalok Neged HaTavshil. So Shulchan Aruch paskins that Meikar HaDin, you need to wait for the food to cool down, and then empty the contents of the pot, because we're worried about what? What are we worried about? If it's Shalok Neged HaTavshil? That it spread to Dafka 59 times its volume, and then you're going to need Shishim times that, so that entire section of the pot becomes Asr. So you have to wait for the food and the pot to cool down, and then you empty it. But the Shulchan Aruch says in Sivav that the minig is to always ask for the food, and when milk falls on the so if milk falls shalok neged atavshil, to just say that the food is asr, because you're worried that part of the food in the pot moved and hit that area of the pot that became asr, meaning maybe that region of the pot became asr, but you know the food moved around in the pot, so maybe some of the food in the pot hit dafka that region of the pot and became asr from that. But b'shas adchak erev Shabbos, oh, it's Friday morning, so if it's Friday morning, so you could be mekel because erev Shabbos you could be mekel. You'll hold like the shita that there's no chanan with flavor that's absorbed in the pot. So what comes out from the psak of the Shulchan Aruch is the following: you're heating up your soup on a Sunday morning. It's not a shasat chak. A drop of milk falls shelo kineged atavshil on the top of the pot. You need to throw out the entire pot of soup, even if you have shishim in the pot against that drop of milk. But if the same exact thing happens on Erev Shabbos, then you're going to be mekel. But the Aruch HaShulchan writes that the minug is against the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah, and the minug is to say like the Rishonim that whenever a drop of milk falls on the outside of the pot, it always makes its way to the food. And according to the Aruch HaShulchan, it doesn't matter where it falls. If there's 60 times in the pot against the drop of the milk, food's going to be mutter, even shalob b'shasad chak, way more mekel than what it says in Shulchan Aruch. But the pot is still going to need to be kashered because you're choshesh for those shitos that the milk stayed in that one spot. If it was, let's say, a vegetable that was frying in a milchik pan and landed on the outside of the pot, then we're totally mekel for sure. Even shelo kineged atavshil. Why? Because it's not even the milk itself. It's only something that has a blia of milk in it. So then we're for sure going to be mekel. So these are tzadim lahakel. You have to realize if the Aruch HaShulchan is going to be mekel on everything anyway, so then it's a major tzad lahakel.
Is the shita that we don't take blios is found out by kelim? Is that by all tanan or only shari tzuris?
No, I think even by Basar B'challah. Yeah, it, within the walls of a pot, right. You won't say Chanan by a Bliya. Okay, another case. Shabbos morning, I think we gave this case in Shir. Shabbos morning, you're making yourself a coffee right next to your metal urn, and as you're pouring your milk, a few drops from the milk fall onto the outside of the urn. They splatter onto the outside of the urn. You finish your coffee, and you take a peek in the chalet to see how it's looking, and it's looking mighty dry. Right, so you want to put some hot water from the urn into the chalent, but now you remember the urn just had a splatter of milk on the outside of the urn. So is all the can you use the water in the urn, the chachila, to put it into the chalent? So what happened to the water in that urn? So again, if there's shishim in the urn against the drop of milk, you could add the water to the chalent, whether it fell on the lower part kineged atavshil or even on shelo kineged atavshil. Because it fell in the lower part of the urn, the drop of milk goes right in and it's batel b'shishim. If it fell in the upper part, shelok neged atavshil, then if you say that it only spread to an area 59 times the drop, you don't say that the entire area becomes milchik, because that relies on chanan. But we say chaticha nasis nevela, we don't say chaticha nasis chalav. So when the pot is fleishik, we say that that drop of milk mixes in with the belios of basar that are there, and we'll say chatich nas nevela. So, but the urn is parif, so the milk spreads. It's still not going to make the entire area milk. We don't say chatich nas chalav. So we only have that drop of milk that's absorbed in the urn, and that drop is going to be brought to the shishim no matter what. So the chora, as long as you have shishim in the urn, connect that drop, which again. You always have, because unless you like poured a gallon of milk over the outside of the, you know, of the urn, if it's mamish a splatter, you're almost always going to have shishim in the water connected to the urn. So Pashto says that would be fine. You still have to navigate the Chashabbos issues in terms of how to pour water from an urn into a chalent pot, whether it's better to do it directly or indirectly.
Is it Pashto?
Yeah, so we discussed this also, right? That milk can become, meaning that was the coffee mate Shaila, right? That meaning bittel of tam means that there's no tam. So if there's no tam, it's not there, right? So so the chalav does become batel, and Pashto says it's nothing. Another case, Shabbos morning. Let's make everything Shabbos morning. So you daven hashkab minyan Shabbos morning, you say Kiddush, and you have some challenge. and you notice that the challenge is pretty dry, or it could even be Friday night. It's Friday night, and you come back from your chavrusa or whatever, and you have some challenge, and the challenge is pretty dry. And you realize that by the time the guests arrive for lunch on Shabbos day, it's going to be very dry, it's going to be very bad. So you quickly add water directly from the urn into the chalon pot. But you realize as you're doing that, you're taking a boiling hot chalon pot, you put it directly under the urn, there's steam coming up from the chalon pot, and you're pouring directly from the spout of the urn into the chalon pot. So have you now made your urn fleshes? Is your urn now fleshes? Because of all that zeya that came from the chalon pot. So what do we say about zeya? So what? If it's yatzaleda. So the if it's right, if the zeya is cool, so what would you just wipe it off, right? So, but if you're taking boiling hot chalon pot and you're putting it directly by the spout, it might be hot enough. So Prima Gadol says that if steam from milk touches a hot fleshik pot, then even if the steam is not yatzaleda, so it will make the pot treif, because it's touching a hot pot. So over here also, if the urn is boiling hot, see, it becomes, meaning it becomes yatzaleda, that's especially tasah gavra, that's the tasah, right? That's the kavur. So it becomes yatzaleda, so it becomes hot enough. So, but so according to the Prima Gadol, the urn that will heat up the steam from the chalent, and the urn is going to become fleishik. However, Yerach HaShulchan points out that the Prima Gadol is only when both pots are in a kira, they're closed off in an area where there's no room for the steam to escape. Whenever there's an open area, we're always way, way, way more makel about Zeya. If it has a place to go all over the place, then the pot doesn't become aser, because the steam goes around the pot and not into the pot. So you're pouring water directly from the urn onto your chalent. Many poskim are makel, or some zalman is makel, as long as you first uncover the pot away from the urn. I mean, you don't allow that initial burst of steam to hit the urn. So you take the chalon pot cover off, then you bring the chalon pot over to the urn, and you pour the water in. Rosh Hashanah thinks that that's fine, as long as it's the steam is far enough away that it's not yatzaledas when it hits the urn. Even though the urn is hot, the steam is going from the chalent onto the urn. The steam evaporates in all different directions. It's not going to do anything. Right, and it's probably best to pour directly from the chalent pot into the urn for Ochel Shabbos reasons. Anyway, okay. A shaila I just got this week. Hi, Rabbi. Okay, I actually copied and pasted this one. Another Pesach question for you. I'm getting Pesach questions now because these are people that have never been home for Pesach except for last year. They're still figuring it out. Right? I mean, they've been in hotels. So another Pesach question for you. Someone told my mom that she can use it. This is this guy, meaning he's a married guy with children, whatever, but you know, the whole family usually goes away to a hotel. Now there's not going to be a hotel. So someone told my mom that she can use an oven for meat after dairy, both uncovered, if she burns the oven out. Pesach question? Right? This is a Pesach question. So, meaning, we can make matzah pizza in the oven, uncovered, turn the oven on 500 for 30 minutes and cook chicken open. Is that correct?
I go the other direction.
Cool.
What?
Probably
the other direction.
Right. So, yeah. So, but does that work also? Meaning, l'chora, meaining, okay. So say, no? What do you think? Who says yes? Who says no? Who says I have a better etza? I don't know why there's a Pesach. It could be that they're only kashering one oven Pesach. Normally they have two ovens. Like normally they use a toaster oven for pizza and things like that, and the oven is always fleishiks. But now the toaster oven is obviously chametz or something like that. I don't know. So according to certain poskim, it's best to have two ovens. I mean, obviously always best, always good to have two ovens, one for a milchig and one for fleishig. Or to at least designate one as a, you know, designate your oven as one gender or the other and cover everything else that's in it. But when we talk la halacha, if you're baking something dry, then what? So first of all, there's two issues. What are the two issues? Zeya and Recha, right? So the Sugya Pesachim talks about Recha, whether Recha Milsa, Recha Lav Milsa. And even if you hold Recha Milsa, that's only Lechadchila. But if you have that, we would pass in Recha Lav Milsa. But so when we pass in Lechadchila, you shouldn't have Recha. But Recha is only if it's simultaneous, then no one even has a Havamina of doing that, right? They're not doing, so the whole issue is really an issue of Zeya. But Zeya is only going to be Nogaya. What? If it's liquidy, right? Like Ramesha says, that if you have something that's even Ramesha, who's so machmir, Ramesha says if you have something that's dry, unless you see the Zeya, then there isn't Zeya, right? If it's something that's moist, maybe you have to be machmir that there is Zeya. If you want to use your fleshig oven for uncovered dairy food that has liquid, then you need to kasher the oven. How do you kasher the oven? 24 hours, and then put it on the highest possible setting for 20 minutes, and then wait. Some say, but then we have Rav Shechter who holds that what? You don't even need to do that. Why? Because there is no Zeya in our ovens. But as long as the oven is still hot from the last cooking, you may still have the Recha hanging around there. So Rav Shechter's Matir L'Chachila use the same oven for meat and milk if both foods have cooled down. So the best thing to do might be just let the oven cool down in between, right? That might be the best thing to do. But anyway, it might be Mutter anyway. Why might it be Mutter anyway? What's he making in this oven? What was the example he gave? He said matzah pizza and then cook chicken open. So chicken might be in the sauce. Matzah pizza is not going to be in the sauce. Right? Matzah pizza is just going to be some cheese on matzah. So is that called moist? Is that going to create enough zeya? Yeah, but it's covered with the cheese.
Yeah, but
it's not like a pool of tomato sauce. I don't know. Okay, maybe. Maybe it will be enough zeya. Probably not. And related question. I just made challah for the first time. This one, I also, hi Rabbi, I just made challah for the first time in my life, a woman wrote to me. L'zuchus refuah shleima for my sister, okay? How do I get rid of the piece of challah? I mean, she actually never did hafrashas challah before. And now she's like, what do I do with this? Right? She's got this piece of dough, and the woman teaching her how to say all the tefillos and the whatever never told her what to do with the dough, with the piece of challah. So it has the din of truma. So what do you do?
Double wrap.
Do you have to double wrap it? That's a question, right? Meaning, really, mikra din? What should we say? It's dry. It's a dry piece of dough. If it's a dry piece of dough, you should be able to bake it open in the oven. So just burn it straight in the oven. Problem is, the post can recommend, don't do that because, if you don't put it in foil, then it's going to sit, someone might just take the dough and put it directly on the oven rack. Now that's a problem, because then you can have blios go directly from the Kedusha Truma, from the Yisra Truma, directly into the oven rack. You don't want that to happen. So you're going to use foil anyway. Once using foil anyway, you might as well wrap it. But really, strictly speaking, like if the question were asked, I burnt the challah in the oven, but I didn't know you were supposed to wrap it. Now am I allowed to eat the other challahs that are in the oven at the same time? Right? So Pasha says, yeah, you are allowed to eat it. None of this would...
Isn't that a meta shaila? For allowing, if someone asks you a shaila, you think not a talmud, why do you? How likely are you to allow them for a line of chapter
So I always recommend wait 24 hours in kasher, right? Because that's what most
posts
do.
I mean
b'dievet. Oh, b'dievet for sure. Yeah, b'dievet for sure. But normally when it comes time, like Shavuos is when all the shailas come up. Usually it's not a Pesach shaila, it's a Shavuos shaila. Because of the cheesecake, you need to make cheesecake uncovered with the crust or whatever. So I always say, look, the best thing to do is... is to wait 24 hours and then kasher it out. Oh, you can't? Okay. So then. You have to also realize that even if they're not a Talmud of YU, if they're asking you shailas, then, it could be that you're the person they ask shailas to now. So, that's... certainly if, like, you're a shul rabbi, if that's... It's like a halach from it's like joining a new community. They're going to a place that has new minhagim. Okay, that is Simen Sadi Beis, Simen Sadi Gimel. What did I write over here?
Can you just clarify what it means, the lesson of Kinegara H in Bab? Sadi Be'ezvah?
Sadi
Be'ezvah.
Oh, when it's, yeah, that's like on the bottom, right by the burner. Like the fire is hitting that part of the pot, so then you assume it burns it up right away. Oh, I haven't been looking on this. Nachi, I'm sorry, I've been ignoring you the whole time. Problem is, I'm never looking at the screen.
I had to go to the counseling center to deal with this, but I think I could
profit. Okay, good. All right, so I'm going to know if you need help with that. So okay, I think we answered your question, right? Anything else?
Well, I just want to clarify, right? We had a shayla earlier, right? Each time we're talking about when, like, the milk is splattered against the pot, right? A flaky pot. So I feel like the splattering is, you know, only drops. It's not a huge amount, which the Shofanar obviously excludes. But for that, like, minute amount, wouldn't that just be burned away to negative H?
Only if it's Keneged Eish. Only if it's Keneged Eish. But if it's not Keneged Eish, it won't be burnt away. Keneged Eish means like at the bottom of the pot where the fire is hitting it. So then you assume that it burns it up right away.
Fine. Alright, I was wondering what the Kiddush was with that. I guess then you're already just clarifying something that's special.
Yeah, meaning even Keneged Eish, if it's a large amount, it won't get burnt up right away, right? We've had cases like that. You take the chicken soup pot out of the refrigerator and you didn't realize that the milk had spilled all over that shelf of the refrigerator, so it's got milk all over the bottom of the pot. So that probably you wouldn't say Keneged Eish. So kashrus itself, pretty much.
You mean we do assume that all that is going to get out of Asia now?
I mentioned that some posts can weren't comfortable with that, but I don't see why not, maybe.
Sometimes there could be spills happen.
Spills happen, and then the fire comes and burns it all up.
And even if it sometimes, let's say, it spills far away from where the fire actually is, so maybe should there be a concern that the fire that doesn't burn it up, but just heats it up enough, then now it's creating...
I think it creates libun. I think I don't know. If you have a, you want a kasher, you can kasher. It's easy enough to kasher. Put a blech over it and turn it on high for 5 minutes, and then it will for sure be libun chum. Okay. But I assume that it gets hot enough anyway, without having to do that.
And the last thing, what was the maskana on the case where the kids put the deli and the cheese in the same Ziploc bag? You know, obviously it's not called Mom and Yisrael.
Not just Mom and Yisrael, the whole family's lunch was, was at risk over there, and they had three crying kids in the back of the minivan, that were starving. I thought that a hadacha, that if you rinse it off, if you can find some water and rinse it off, so it'll taste the same, it'll still taste good.
Fine, thank you.
Okay.
Rabbi, can I just ask a question, just clarifying? Sorry, your
sure.
Voice in the room. Would Rabbi say pizza normally in an oven that's usually used for meat could be cooked uncovered?
Yeah, certainly if you wait for it to cool down, and better if you wait 24 hours, but yeah, I would think so.
That's a
lemaisa
shayla that just got asked.
That's a
lemaisa shayla. He's like, what? last night he just said, I now can't do pizza in the oven.
Yeah, okay. Isaac, have we changed your life? So where are we? All right. I don't know why I wrote this way, but I wrote, I don't know if you guys even are familiar with the dish. Anyone have Hungarian descent? Anyone here? Yeah, are you familiar with a dish called chicken paprikash? Huh? So I grew up on. So when I read The Choice, Eva Edith Eger, she spoke about growing up in Hungary, and she said, oh, my mother made the best chicken paprikash. I'm like, oh, I know what that is, But anyway, it's chicken in a sauce. I just couldn't think of when else you'd have chicken in a sauce other than chicken soup, and I got tired of using the example of chicken soup. Okay, or maybe this actually happened, and it was with my wife makes chicken paprikash always for the Seder. Because you know, it's in the sauce, right? So you don't have any tzli or anything. Anyway, so you accidentally cover a hot pot of chicken paprikash with a milchik pot cover. Can you eat the food? And what's the status of the pot? Chicken. You take a milchik pot cover and you put it on the pot. What? Oh, so first question, is it a ben yomo? So if the lid and the pot are hot and ben yomo, then everything's asur right away, right? That's the worst situation. If the lid is eno ben yomo, then the Rama says that the lid still has the status of ben yomo pot, but b'shas al chak, the lid could be considered eno ben yomo. If the lid is cold and the pot is hot, which is most common, so then everything's going to be asur because tasa gavar. Right, and the steam from the food goes up and hits the lid, and the lid will shvitz and will answer the food and the pot. If there's no food in the pot, then the lid and the pot are totally mutter because it's two pots touching each other, doesn't do anything. Then we saw Chamudei Daniel that if you cover the pot and then quickly remove the lid before Zay accumulates on the lid, then everything's going to be mutter when there's food in the pot. Right, because did we see that Chamudei Daniel? If you do it really quickly, it's like there was no condensation that built up, so then you know, it didn't have time for it to build up and fall back into the food. Okay.
How much condensation is
still built up? Yeah, that's a good question. He just says Chamudei Daniel. We saw the Chamudei Daniel, right? That if you do it quickly, it's like, oh my gosh, right? You know, I don't know how to quantify it. Okay, next one. The meat soup is overflowing. You quickly remove the lid and accidentally place it on a cold milchik pot that's off the fire. Can you eat the food that's inside the pot? Meaning, what happens? Yeah, you go to the stovetop and there's a milchik frying pan, cold, clean milchik frying pan, just sitting on a burner that's off, right? Just sitting there, and the chicken soup is cooking in the pot, and you see that because it's boiling over. So you quickly go and you lower the flame and you pull off the lid and just stick the lid directly onto the milchik frying pan, right? Because you weren't focused on where you were putting it. You just put it down next to it and you put it down on the milchik frying pan. So Ma says, tasa gavar, right? So the cold pot cools off the hot lid. So if there's no food in the pot, everything would be mutter because it's two pots touching each other. But if there's food in the pot, you need to take a kedei klipa from the food. So the shach disagrees, Shach and Sivkat and Vav over here, right? And the Shach says that since the lid is hot, the drops that are on the lid also remain hot, and they asur the pot, which would asur the food. Yeah. Let's take a look at this inside. Simonson, you know. Yeah. What does Rama say? Vima kiso itzone in vakadera cham and amishneim asurim. Im hischala zia tachsak hizda sagavar. Vima kiso cham vakadera tzonenes. Hakol shari. Rakamachal tzarech klipa. Im efshal akalpo. Vim lav hakol shari. So says the Shach, Vimakiso Icham Vakdera Tsunenes Hakol Shari, Vafilu Vakdera Atzma Shari Lechadchila Kishemekancha Omadicha Lamaila B'makum Shnaga B'kisoi, as long as you rinse it off. Vyavol Pishalach Luchis Hayacham Mikal Makum Shari Shemash Nifrash Minakiso Yavi Kiklisheni V'lodami Li'iroi D'tipa Achas Koach Chamimus Oposik V'en Kli Rishon. Even though the droplets are falling from a lid that was a Kli Rishon, but it's droplets, so that's the din of a Kli Sheni. Ad Kan L'shon Darkei Moshe B'Shem Yisr V'Heter Aruch V'da Because of all the dark emotion, the Agos Shari Dura Polygalis of Hetero Aruch, Visirle, the Bekisoi Retachas Alcadera Tsonenes, Hakisoi Vacadera Asurim, Kivendora Tehu, Efsha Shaloba Lacadera Chalavs Menabasar, Midi Dahavi Atibro Takshana Valacadera. He says that the Shari Dura, disagrees with the Yisavater and holds that it's going to Asur. And the Shach sides like that, right? The Shach sides like that in the end. Then he says, however, Miu calls a Kshiesh Lachuchus Bikisoi, Aval Yavisha Pshita to Lukuli Alma Kol Shari, Yavisha to the Kol Shari, Vchendas Marshal. Right? You have to assume that it has lachluchas because it was sitting on top of a pot of chicken soup. So you assume that it has machluchas, lachluchas. Okay, next. Okay, we'll do one more, and then maybe we'll have another day of shir to do questions on Tzadi Dalet. Maybe we'll do so one more for Tzadi Gimel. Another lid shayla. You take the lid from the hot meat soup, and drops from the lid fall on a cold milchik pot. So what's the din? The drops in the, or if it drops on the milk counter or something like that. So what's the din? So that's pretty straightforward. No. It happens all the time, right? You take a piece, you take the lid off the chicken soup, so if some drops fall on the frying pan sitting next to it, or fall on the milch counter. So what do we assume? So we assume that if little droplets are falling off by the time it hits the counter, you didn't put it on the right, by the time it hits the counter, it's already going to be cold, and l'chora, the pot, the countertop, whatever, as long as you rinse it off, as long as you clean it off, l'chora, that's going to be mutter. Okay, so that leaves us with Tzadi Dalet Ez Rishon. So maybe... it's up to you guys, whatever. If you want to do another day of questions on Tzadi Dalet, I'm game. If not, totally up to you. Okay? All right. Have a great day, everyone.